The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Scott Ian, co-founder of the Big Four metal band, Anthrax. He just published a memoir, I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax. And Anthrax just released a new concert DVD, Chili on Hell. Stick around. Loud talk about loud music, straight ahead. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you preferred to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening.
Mr. Media is recorded live
for
before
watching. A studio audience full of Sabotage fans who still think their favorite band rocks harder and louder than your favorite band in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Okay, so maybe Scott Ian, co-founder of the heavy metal band Anthrax, would not be the first guy whose memoir you'd want to read, or even expect to be written. But Ian, who grew up a fan of Kiss, and whose band's success began and often paralleled that of its friends in Metallica, lived through a unique period of rock music, one in which the music grew louder and angrier than anyone ever before imagined it could. The band even reimagined Public Enemy's rap hit, Bring the Noise, and co-headlined a tour with Chuck D and Flava Flav. In I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax, co-authored by John Wiederhorn, Ian tells his story in plain English. There is no attempt to paint him as something or someone he's not. He details the highs and lows of a band that has survived a rotating lineup, lousy record contracts, and career-threatening mishaps. Now, even if you're a rock fan who is not necessarily an Anthrax fan, Ian's story, as told here, is a universal one for anyone that ever considered starting a band or worshiped the devil out of one. And, not by accident, release of I'm the Man was accompanied by a new concert DVD, Chili on Hell, by Anthrax. The book and the DVD are sold separately. Scott Ian, welcome to Mr. Media.
Oh, thank you.
Scott, who was more surprised, your parents or your fans, that you decided to write a book?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know that any of them were surprised. I don't know.
Well, I ask about your parents in that, I know there was a struggle when you were younger about school and college, and you didn't necessarily do particularly what your mom had in mind for you to do. So the idea that you would write a book, I would think, was probably surprising, but yet somewhat thrilling for her.
Yeah, you'd have to ask her. I don't know. I don't know about surprising at all. I know she's very proud of me that I have a book out.
All right. And what put the idea of writing a book on your radar?
I've been asked to do one for years, and I just always said no because I really just knew I couldn't commit to the work. If someone was going to give me money to write a book, you know, then I have to do the work. And I couldn't say yes in good faith. So, a couple of years ago, I just started writing out a lot of stories and things like that. Something would pop in my head and I would just make notes and write things out, because I found I was actually just starting to forget stuff. And out of writing out all those stories came the talking shows I started doing. And then out of those talking shows came the idea that, well, I've got a lot of the work done now. I could actually probably do a book.
One of the things that I found so interesting that I had no knowledge of, I didn't realize how intertwined the early days of Anthrax and Metallica were. That made for some very interesting reading. I'm sure, you know, hardcore Anthrax fans were aware of it. There's the involvement of the Big Four, and you know, you tour with them a lot. But when you look back 30 years, and you think of the early days of you know, them sleeping in the warehouse, and you guys bringing them food and hanging out, would you ever have guessed that the relationship would have endured this long?
No, I mean, it's not even a case of the relationship lasting this long. Just the fact that both our bands are still doing what we do in 2014. No, I mean, I can't say that I was looking that far forward. Definitely not.
Is there something unique in the relationship between the guys in Anthrax?
Hello, hello.
Yeah, I'm still here. Are you there?
Sorry, I cut out.
Is there something unique in the relationship between Anthrax and Metallica that does not repeat in your relationships with other bands?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say that, you know, just because, you know, I was there. I was there the day those guys showed up in New York City. Kirk Hammett's become a very close friend of mine. Obviously, he wrote the foreword to the book. I wanted somebody who's known me this long and who understands this world. And he's known me before I did anything. Like, I'd known him before he did accomplished anything in music. And, you know, I mean, we just have a really long, true relationship. You know, I'm actually friends with Kirk outside of music, you know. So it's a real friendship I have with him, rather than just like band friends. So, you know, we get along great. Those guys are like the same dudes they've always been. You know, and we're just happy that we still get to play shows together.
As you're working on the book and you're remembering stories and, you know, things like, you know, the changing in and out of band members, the singers of the band, Anthrax. Did you learn anything about yourself and the way that you run the band over the years? And did anything change since you've written the book? And did you want to talk to people about things that, you know, you wish you hadn't done, or thank people who had been helpful along the way? Any of that kind of introspection?
Well, I mean, I don't run the band. Maybe I did. I tried to more in the early days, certainly, you know, leading up to once we had a lineup that recorded Fistful of Metal. But yeah, certainly a lot of the book, I normally don't ever look back. I certainly don't dwell on my past ever. I really have no connection to it ever until I started working on the book. And then, you know, really I dove in, you know, really dove into the things that I was thinking about and talking about and really trying to figure out who I was when I was 25 or 30 or 35 or 18, really kind of look back and think about what my motivations were and what I was thinking about. And, you know, from a memory point of view, it wasn't that hard to get back into it once I really started to think about things and really talk them through with John Wiederhorn. And yeah, a lot of it's difficult, you know. Certainly a lot of the book is talking about traumatic things in my life personally and professionally, whether it's failed marriages or, you know, firing Joey in 1992, you know, especially that scenario is something that I really spent a lot of time thinking about. And I feel like really coming to the realization that, you know, it was never, I've always said publicly, it was never a case of Joey not being a great singer or anything personal about him, because Joey's a great dude and he's a great singer. It was really, it came down to, for me, just me not being able to deal with someone else singing my lyrics, because my lyrics were so fucked up at the time, reflecting what was going on in my personal life with the woman who was going to become my second wife. Things were already kind of fucked up at that point, and I really felt like it just – the message wasn't being conveyed, and I couldn't step up to the plate and sing. And all of those frustrations and everything I had going on in my personal life, I think, really pushed me and motivated me to want that change to happen. And, you know, it wasn't just me. The whole band was on the same page at the time. But for me, it was just way more personal. And, you know, I obviously can't change the past, but I certainly can reexamine it and understand that I probably should have thought it through a little bit more. And I probably should have given Joey more of a chance and more credit at the time. You know, because Joey said something to me not that long ago. He said, like, I could have moved forward with you guys. I could have done it, you know, because we were talking about worship music and the vocals on that album. And I told him how, you know, I hear things that I've never heard from him before. And, you know, and he said to me, I could have moved forward with you guys. And I said, you know what? I believe you. But the 27-year-old me didn't understand that at the time. So, you know, you can't change the past, but you can move forward and hopefully get on with your life, you know, and learn from things that you do and hopefully not make the same mistakes. And I'm not, you know, and that's nothing against John Bush, obviously, because John Bush is, I love John Bush. He's a great singer, and I love all our history with John as well. But, you know, it just stuff, so much of this stuff came up in my brain, you know, when I was kind of researching the book.
Hmm. Has anyone, the book hasn't been out very long at this point.
Comes out tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for the public, but I imagine there have been people who are close to you have probably seen it or had access. Have you gotten any response, or are you anticipating any response from maybe any ex-band members or perhaps an ex-wife who might not be too thrilled with their portrayal, or maybe not their portrayal, but one of the reasons I really like the book is that you're very honest about how you felt at that time and what you were thinking, but maybe some people may not feel as good about it. When they read about,
you know what, I can't help that. And truthfully, I mean, I really don't care. I look at the book the same way I look at Anthrax and our music. I really do not care what anybody else thinks. You know, my approach towards art, let's say, whether it's writing lyrics and being a part of Anthrax, writing this book, is, you know, you have to do it for yourself first and foremost. And it has to be something that kicks you in the ass. And I'm not worried about what anybody thinks, you know. You know, it comes down to it's my story, you know, and I think I'm being super honest in this book. All you have to do is read it and see I'm not afraid to point the finger at myself about a lot of things. So, and if anything, that's a reaction I've gotten so far from people in my family and friends who have read the book, is that they're surprised actually how honest I am about some of this stuff. They're like, you didn't have to, you know, go that warts and all. But I kind of felt like if I wasn't honest, then kind of what's the point about writing a book?
I agree. I mean, I won't lie. I haven't followed Anthrax's music over the years as much. I was a music critic in the 80s, and I covered a lot of metal bands and a lot of concerts and did a lot of interviews. So when I was presented with the book, I was like, I don't know. And I started reading it, and I thought, wow, you were really ruthlessly honest about stuff. Only person I feel for in the book, and this is what I'm curious about, is your first wife. I feel like, not that you were mean to her now, but you were so honest about how you felt then. I just thought, oh, I kind of feel for her. She's, you know, she's going to probably relive something that maybe she didn't want to relive again when she sees this.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, look, I'm telling a story, and at least, you know, I'm pointing the finger at myself there. Bottom line is, like I say in the book, I was 22 years old. You know, it was definitely my mistake. And, you know, it's something, whether or not I, you know, all these years later, writing a book and coming to that realization. I mean, it's not like I wrote the book and came to this realization. I've known a long time. It's just now it's going to be public. So, but yeah, you know, at 22, and I've just started a band, and my goal is to travel the world for the rest of my life and make albums and all that, probably not a good time to be settling down. It's just, you know, but I was 22. I didn't know anything about anything.
So I want to ask you about two places that come up a couple of times in the book. One is Tampa, where the book opens, where you're breaking into Legends Field. And the other is a very small town in New Jersey, Sayreville. And I'm wondering, they both have sort of a rep for hardcore, heavy metal. Do they have anything in common? Is there anything about those two towns that...
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't really know anything about Tampa other than, you know, I've played there a bunch over the years, and I got arrested at Legends Field, but I don't really know anything about Tampa as compared to Sayreville. No, I mean, I haven't even been that much in Sayreville. I mean, I would go there to hang out once in a while, like back in 82, 83, but I don't really, other than hanging out at like Metal Joe's house or the Club 516 or like, you know, Johnny's old Rock and Roll Heaven store, which I guess was more an old bridge or something, but either way, I don't really know anything about the town.
All right. I was just curious. Let me ask about something else. This was also very interesting in the latter part of the book. We learn about your father-in-law, at the time, your future father-in-law, Meatloaf. And I was telling my wife about this, and she said, ask him what Meatloaf is like as a grandfather. So that's the question.
Oh, he's great. He's the best. He loves our son, and Revel loves his Papa Meat. That's what he calls him. Yeah, he's a great grandpa. He's awesome.
And okay, so what do you think? Thank you for answering that for my wife. What do you think? Why has Anthrax endured all these years? I mean, to read the book, it seems like it's because you would not take no for an answer. All the things that came up that could have killed the band, that killed other bands, never undid you guys. Why? Well, you know.
You just answered it because I wrote a song, lyrics to a song called Refuse to Be Denied on our We've Come For You All album. And that basically paints the picture. I refuse to stop. I refuse to be told that I can't do what I love to do anymore. Regardless of whether it was something that was our fault or if it was just because of the change in the business in the 90s and people's tastes and perception of music, there was no way I was ever going to stop. The only way I would ever stop doing this is if it's not fun for me to do anymore. But I will never let anything outside, you know, outside the members of this band, you know, put a stop to what we're doing. There's just no way. And I knew we just had enough in us. And we just had the wherewithal to weather whatever was thrown at us over the years and to be able to just keep coming back and keep making records where, you know, we really had something to say. And I knew eventually things would come back around. I mean, it's just I believed it deep down all those years, you know, through the 90s when things started to change for us all the way up into the early 2000s. And there's just no way I was going to stop. There's no way. I would never have quit. Like I said, I'll quit when I think it's time to stop, and that's it.
All right. So as we kind of wrap up, if Anthrax could be remembered for one thing and you could have a say in what that one thing was, say 20, 50, 100 years from now, what would it be? Bring the noise? Would it bring On the Man? What, or something else?
I don't know that there's one thing. I just think it's, for me, it's the career. It's the fact that, you know, we released our first record in January of 84. So we're going on 31 years of being, you know, a band making records and touring. And, how many hands can you count on bands? You could maybe more than two hands, but not that many more than two hands could you count bands that have been active consistently for over 30 years making records and touring and, you know, and doing it at the level we're doing it. And we still have a whole bunch to say. Like, to me, there's no end in sight at this point. So I just think that's the thing for me. Like AC/DC, if I would never compare Anthrax to AC/DC. They're my favorite band in the world. But the one thing I will compare is that we are a blue collar band in the same way AC/DC is. All we want to do is make records and go out and play shows because we think we're a great live band. And I would love to be thought of as that. We were a working band. Like that's what I would like to be thought of. And we did it for as long as we wanted to do it.
Okay. Well, folks, you can find Scott Ian's memoir, I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax, as well as the new Anthrax DVD, Chili Angel, in great stores everywhere, or you can order both right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you watch the show and you're watching on MrMedia.com right now, you know how this works. Somewhere to the left or right below Scott is you'll see the cover of the book, which is really cool, and you'll also see the cover of the DVD. Click on it right now. You'll get it from Amazon.com. They can send it to you by drone in 30 minutes or less, or you can get it through traditional delivery, whatever you want to pay for. Scott, do you have a website for yourself? I know there's anthrax.com. Is there a website?
Yeah, it's actually Scott-Ian, S-C-O-T-T, then a dash, and then Ian.com.
All right. And do you follow any social media, Facebook, Twitter, any of that kind of stuff?
I'm on Twitter, Scott_Ian.
Very good. Well, and I apologize. We had some technical problems at the beginning. Thanks for your patience. And thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Cool. Thank you. No worries, man.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. Cheers.
Folks, you can find Scott Ian's memoir, I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax, as well as the new Anthrax DVD, Chili on Hell, in great stores everywhere, where you can order both right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. Now, if you're watching this on MrMedia.com, you probably already know, but to the left or right, underneath this video is the image of the book and the image of the DVD. All you do is click on it. It'll take you right to Amazon, where you can have it delivered to you in 30 minutes or less, in certain neighborhoods, I think, by Amazon. Or you can just get it within a day or two, also by Amazon. If you want more information about Scott Ian, go to Scott-Ian, that's Scott-Ian, .com. And there's links there to Scott's Facebook page, his Twitter page. You can order products, all that kind of stuff. And we want to thank Scott Ian of Anthrax so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com, the George and Tony Entertainment Show from the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk. And they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. This is Adam and Acid to the Extreme.
So, I'm sorry, did you ever see the film Rubber?
I've seen Flubber.
I've heard of Rubber. Isn't that about like a tire or something? Like,
it is. Dude, Adam, you got to watch this movie. I'm serious.
Rubber?
It's so great. It's about a serial killer that is a tire. You know, kind of like Christine was a car. It's a tire.
And how much LSD was the director on when he...
I don't know, but it's great because what happens without giving anything away, the tire just kind of rolls into place, very sinister, and there's the person in the background. This was a highly entertaining movie, and the greatest thing, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but there's a scene where the local sheriff has got all his deputies together. He's describing this tire, and one of the deputies goes, "Is he black?"
Right here on the Realm Network.